Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. We are off and running on Thursday, February the 6th, 2025. Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. Tom, where's the rain? We need that rain. It's terrible. One of the driest winters.
Are they forecasting any? What's the story?
I don't see any in the 10-day forecast. And
interestingly enough, yeah. California, Southern California, has been getting quite a bit of rain here lately.
Yeah, so is the Bay Area. They've had some very good rain recently. Hasn't made it over here. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio at the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson, five radio stations under one roof, and they're all doing very well. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We're in our 15th year of the Buckmaster radio program and my 37th year in broadcasting here in Tucson. We've got our worldwide live listening, all of our podcasts on the website, buckmastershow.com. For our telephone interviews, the live line presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's welcome the District 4 Republican supervisor, the lone Republican on the five-member board of the Pima County Supervisors, Steve Christie. One-time well-known automobile dealer here in town, starting his third four-year term on the board. Hey, Supervisor, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Always good to be with you, Bill.
Thanks. And as I mentioned to Tom, and it's no secret, we have virtually no rain. We went 90 days before we got a little rain last week, and we had enough to pretty much wet the pavement, and that's about it. And it's a concern because, especially District 4 up at Mount Lemmon, that's part of your district.
It is, and everybody feels that a little rain is a good thing, but in some ways it can be somewhat of a danger because it's just enough to start the growth of the vegetation that turns dry and volatile very quickly. And I'm afraid that might be occurring because it's of such little precipitation. But yes, my district is very vulnerable in many areas, not just Mount Lemmon or Summerhaven and those areas that have been very hard hit over the years, but certainly down in the Vail area and even in the Green Valley area, that there's replications of environment, of topography, of the vegetation that's very reminiscent of the LA area. So if we feel some sort of sense of complacency that we can kind of slide by without preparing for this, all we have to do is look at what happened in the LA area and it transpose it over to our county and our community. And the same set of factors exists in our community as it did in LA. So we're very concerned and we're very proactive on it. And we're trying to develop some plans that will put it in the forefront and prepare us for any kinds of wildfire emergencies.
Even an awareness campaign to clean the vegetation out around your property would be a step in the right direction.
Yes, and the Reddington community, they've had a number of wildfires as well. So it goes all the way from the Reddington area down to Green Valley, and we are strong proponents of the FireWise certification program that has detailed plans and programs to safeguard your property in the event of wildfires, and if not to prevent wildfires. And we're very fortunate. The gold bar of the neighborhood FireWise certification program is the Summerhaven community, and it's paid dividends in the that area. It's, you could see, it was amazing when we had the last fire. You could see the aftermath of how it was almost like a precision knife secured the homes and the buildings in the Summerhaven area by kind of etching out the borders. Mm-hmm. And on one side was just devastated wildfire damage. Mm-hmm. And then all the structures were left standing and protected.
Because those properties had taken the preventive measures by cleaning out all the old growth.
Exactly, and safeguarding their homes to prevent when the ashes fall and the embers fall on your porch and a whole host of and variety of very productive, positive ways that actually do help prevent your property from being damaged. It's gained a lot of traction, and even down in Green Valley, we're up to 4 HOAs that have done a terrific job of becoming certified down there. I think in the Costas Adobes area, that's not my district, but They've taken the FireWise certification to a couple of neighborhoods there. And we're trying to get everybody aware of it, because once they do it collectively, it just makes it that much safer throughout the district.
Yeah, and when it comes to fire districts, some of these districts are struggling. We're talking, the fire suppression area of some of the Pima County is questionable financially anyway, Steve Christie.
It certainly is, and I have to give credit to my colleague, Supervisor Matt Hines. He presented and passed a resolution authorizing our lobbyists at the state capitol to find funding ways to support fire districts, and apparently the firefighting mm-hmm. community reached out to him and with great concern, saying there are a number of fire districts in Pima County that are underfunded, mm-hmm. understaffed, under-equipped, and a number of them are flat broke. And what happens when those fire districts are affected by wildfire? They can't adequately fight. In my own district, out at Elephant Head, because of its location and because of the distance between fire districts, they are completely unprotected, the homeowners out there. They don't have any subscription services. They don't have any services. So that's a very volatile area, very...
Who covers that area fire-wise?
There is no one to do it. And that's really a horrific situation that we've got as far as dealing with that. So to Supervisor Hines' credit, he is looking for ways to find funding to bring these fire districts up to speed so they can do an effective job of firefighting.
All right, Steve Christie is with us, Pima County Supervisor, Republican District Number 4. The board decided on Tuesday to release a memo that lays out how Pima County officials should deal with immigration officials during the Trump administration's crackdown. What's this all about, Steve Christie?
Well, I think what happened, and again, I'm speculating, that the immigration policies of enforcement from the Trump administration came upon the country in general, and perhaps Arizona and Pima County in particular, in a very lightning-like manner. And I think what was concerning was the speed that these immigration rumors of deportation and crackdowns and roundups were hitting officials and county leaders. And I think because of that, they wanted to present the image to the community, particularly as what they call the immigration community, that Pima County administration was aware of the situation with the Trump administration. They were aware of the plans that the Trump administration was implementing to address illegal immigration and criminal immigration. And they wanted, I think, to present the position that the county was aware of what was going on, and that they could at least make the appearance that they were in front of this whole issue by issuing some sort of guidance. Well, if you look at the guidance that the county attorney produced, and you look at the memorandum the county administrator Lesher produced, which was before the county attorneys was released, there's very little sunlight that can get between the two of them as far as a difference. They're they're very much the same, but I think it was an attempt to try to make it an appearance of how we should be guided by any kind of immigration efforts to do their job. But at the end of the day, if you even read the guidance from both memorandums from the county attorney and from the county administrator, there really is no real teeth or anything in it that can prevent the federal government from doing its law-abiding efforts to control immigration and to control illegal and unlawful immigration. So it was, I think, a lot of window dressing, and I think maybe a little bit of muscle flexing and showboating to say, look, everybody, we know what's going on, and this is what you're going to do.
Is it, right?
But they're at the, if you read into it between the lines, there's really nothing that can prevent the federal government from doing their job.
All right, let's take a break right here. More with Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie. It's the Buckmaster Show on Thursday. And tomorrow, Leah Marquez-Peterson from the Arizona Corporation Commission will be joining us. Good timing to have Leah, front page story on the Arizona Daily Star, that the three big power companies in Arizona have decided they want to move forward with actually building another nuclear power plant in Arizona. So we'll talk with the ACC Commissioner Leah Marquez-Peterson about that and a lot of other things tomorrow on our Friday Focus interview. But right now, let's take a break. We'll be back with Steve Christie right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We send a lot of listeners, not only the Green Things, but also to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It makes a nice outing. And it doesn't have to be on the weekends. You got some time off, take the midweek trip over to Silver City. About a three-hour drive east of Tucson, tons of outdoor activities like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, just sort of hanging out in historic Silver City. Some very beautiful architecture, Victorian architecture, and some great places to eat there. And then north of town is the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument, which is makes a great outing. That's about an hour, maybe not even that, 45 minutes north of downtown Silver City. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Steve Christie is here, Pima County Supervisor, the lone Republican on the five-member board. But he doesn't feel too alone out there. Some days you get some support, like you were just saying. Actually, you and Dr. Hines, Supervisor Hines, agreed about trying to get some more money for fire districts.
Yeah. Those are the far and few in between, but when they do come along, I think they're very important and impactful, and I have to give him credit for reaching out to me because of my involvement and interest in wildfire protection, and they kind of dovetailed together. And I'm grateful that he brought it before the board, and I'm grateful that the board supported it. And I'll continue to work with my colleagues, particularly Supervisor Hines, on this issue. And I think he's got a good grasp of the severity of the problem. And I want to be as supportive of his efforts as he's been as supportive of mine on the plan to be evolved and produced by the county administrator of a wildfire prevention emergency plan from all aspects, from our Office of Emergency Management to the fire districts. One of the issues, of course, in the resolution is we want to be good. Pima County needs to be a good neighbor. If they have rights of ways or alleys or vacant lots or properties that are overgrown, that are fire hazards, that are full of consumptive fuel, we are obligated, I believe, to make sure that those are not part of a wildfire fuel consumption. And I would be devastated, and I believe my colleagues and board members would be devastated, if it was found out after a wildfire that a contributor of the wildfire, or maybe even the cause of a wildfire, was due to negligence on the county's part by not cleaning up those areas and preventing those to become combustible to enhance the wildfire. So I think from that perspective, and also encouraging neighborhoods to do the FireWise certification as well as clean up their properties by maybe lending, I don't know, trash bins or wood chippers or something to support the efforts of neighborhoods and homeowners that want to be proactive in preventing wildfire damage to their homes. So there's a lot we can do, but I think what we don't want to have happen is kind of the chaos that ensued the LA area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can discuss the pros and cons of all that happened there, or the causes and the blames. But nonetheless, it obviously appears to all who are observing this with any interest is that there was not a fundamental plan to bring this whole issue to the forefront before it happened. And of course, now you have nothing but total devastation, homeless people, lives ruined, and now finger pointed as to, you know, was there enough water in the fire hydrants? Was there enough water in the reservoir? I'm urging our county administrator to take those issues and issues like them and address them on the Pima County level, so we don't face the same a wildfire issue and devastation, but also that we're not looked at as being incompetent or with our head in the sand when we knew far well in advance that this season coming up, mm-hmm, is a very volatile wildfire season and could be one of the worst ever.
One of the fundamental questions that needs to be asked, Steve Christie, do we have the water resources to fight a major wildfire in Pima County?
That should be part of the plan to analyze that. And if so, how will it be dispersed? And how will it be transported throughout the county in a method that will not only fight existing fires, but prevent ones from starting in the first place? Those are all the issues that we are asking and directing the county administrator and her staff to produce in 90 days a definitive wildfire prevention plan and action plan on those levels, so that we're not holding some sort of a bag in the event that there's been a major catastrophe of a wildfire and people say to us, where was Pima County?
Of course, Proposition 414 is something everybody's talking about. It is a city mail-in election, and those ballots will be going out next Wednesday, actually. We're less than a week away from the city's all-mail-in election, which has to do with raising the property, raising the sales tax. As a former automobile dealer in town, the automobile dealers that are within the city of Tucson, they must be worried about this.
We were always, and I'm certain, are still worried about any kind of a sales tax increase. And I just have to point out that my former colleague, Sharon Bronson, wrote a very definitive op-ed in this morning's Star that really covers and highlights all the major factors about why she is urging Tucson residents to vote down this proposition. And yes, when you talk about it nowadays, the prices of new cars and the old saw about, you know, that's more expensive than the first home I ever. Well, it's the truth. They're in six figures, most of them now.
Yeah.
Many of them. And when you add a potential 9.2% of taxes on top of that, that's a huge amount. And it could definitely cause people to spend their money on automobiles outside the city limits of Tucson and driving business away from a very important economic development factor in our community of jobs, of tax collection, of growth, of careers. The automotive industry, it's a huge opportunity now for growth, and it'll only be stifled by adding more sales tax to it. And there is also the perception of trust. Is this money that is being presented to be raised, is it going to go to where it's being designated in the whole process?
And that's actually the question I brought up yesterday with Kevin Dahl, Tucson City Councilman. He was very honest about it. He said, yeah, it is about the trust. I asked him, isn't this in the end come down to that one word, trust?
Very much so. And there is a predominant, I would say, and huge lack of trust by the community in the city of Tucson's ability to deliver what they're trying to present here. And if you look at in the recent past, I believe there's been two ballot measures that have passed for tax increases that have gone for specifically for road improvement,
some infrastructure for public safety, and then there was the parks measure. So and that's three.
I would have to say, if you went up to Mr. and Mrs. Joe Tucson and said, "Are your roads improved since then? Are your parks improved since then? Do we have a safer and more secure, crime-free community with ample police protection?" The answer would be overwhelmingly, no, we don't. So now, knowing that, they're going to add another sales tax to do pretty much the same thing that they said they'd do before. And all it's going to do at this point is reduce and erode that trust element and to send people away with their money to go buy their goods and services somewhere else.
Boy, nothing brings out the crowd to a Pima County Board of Supervisors meeting like an issue, the not in my backyard issues always bring out a lot of people, and the supervisors' chambers were pretty full. And most of the people in attendance there wanted to talk about an 80-foot-tall cell tower that would be going up in the Picture Rocks area. The proposed site is in Supervisor Jennifer Allen's district. She went on record publicly opposing the tower. I think you were the lone vote in favor of this tower.
I was, and I, not being in my district, I had less of an emotional outlook on it or a pressure outlook on it because, one reporter noted, I think, quite substantially that there's nothing that can pack a chamber than a cell tower issue, even when you're talking about releasing a county attorney's directive on illegal immigration.
You
could see where the
where the interest lies.
Yeah. So my main concern was to make sure that in this proposal, first of all, it was supported by the development services staff in Pima County, And I received.
Did they say it met all the legal obligations?
I asked them that question twice, and twice they told me that it did, even though some of the speakers used that as a way to say that the permitting process and the regulations were not being met and were being broken. They say it is. People are complaining about being underserved and no service without more cell phone enhancement. Here's an opportunity for more cell phone enhancement. And, of course, the public pressure went to the supervisors. And as I say, I was the only one that said, we're just looking at the whole thing from a realistic standpoint, and I see no reason why it shouldn't be there.
And this would provide coverage, I think, for about 2,000 residents in that area.
It would, and yeah. it's an extra option that folks out there would have to be able to have adequate cell phone and internet services.
Yeah, because right now I think T-Mobile shows that area does have coverage with T-Mobile. But anyways, it gives those people an extra option, as you say. All right, Pima County Supervisor
Bill,
Steve Christie.
One other thing, I don't know if I told you this.
I think I know what's coming.
And it's that I love being supervisor.
There you go. Well, you've got in your third term here, just beginning, almost four full years. All right, Steve Christie. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, we'll take a break right here. The famed comet discoverer, Dr. David Levy, with his monthly visit, and then Don Luce, our attorney, after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Bill Buckmaster back with you, and we're going to bring in attorney Don Luce a little bit early today after we talk a little bit about Green Things and Zocalo Village. Green Things has a demolition sale going on. I think that's about the best way to put it. Pima County said that the five buildings that consist of Zocalo Village are in the floodplain. So that means the buildings have to be torn down. So Jan and Jack, the owners, said rather than move all the merchandise over to the new building, hey, why don't we just drastically discount what we've got? So up to 50% off at Zocalo Village, which is part of the Green Things operation at 3384 East River Road, right by the Rito River. Their website, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They are a family-owned and operated business, have been since 1970. So check it out. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studios here at Bustos Media. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We're joined now in studio by attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor. He's also the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers. And when you live in Arizona, with all the laws that the legislature is very prolific about that, there's plenty to talk about when it comes to Arizona laws. Estate planning in Arizona, what you need to know, very good resource for everybody. Everybody should have an estate plan talking about their final wishes. Both books are in their second printing. Hey, Don, how are you?
I'm fine, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. And there's always a lot going on, especially when the legislature is back in session. President Trump signed an order designing to keep transgender girls and women out of sports. So sports that are designated for females. Just wondering how that is going to impact Arizona, Don Luce.
Well, it's interesting, Bill. And to your point, when the legislature is in session, there are literally hundreds of bills considered, signed, sent to the governor. This doesn't involve one of them, however, because this comes from above. This comes from an executive order,
yes,
from the president, one of many that he signed in the past several weeks. This executive order actually has a title. The title is Keeping Men Out of Women's Sports.
Okay, pretty direct there.
He signed it on National Girls and Women's in Sports Day,
mm-hmm,
which was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what does this do? Basically, it directs the Education Department to reinterpret Title IX. So Title IX is the 1972 law that basically prohibits sex discrimination in any program that receives federal funding, which means almost all college sports programs, and therefore Title IX has widespread application nationwide. And up until this executive order, there was some question about how Title IX governs or relates to transgender women, because there was some criticism about the perceived advantage that transgender women had because they were born biologically as men, right? And so there was another executive order that preceded this, and I think everybody has heard about the executive order that says we have two sexes in the United States now, men and women, right?
Right.
So
that's it.
Well, apparently. So this Keeping Men Out of Women's Sports order that was signed yesterday is sort of a tag on to that. And it means that Title IX is now going to be interpreted as not allowing transgender women to participate in women's sports. So where this is going to go, no one knows. two of the executive orders that President Trump has already signed are already under attack. And I know at least one of them has been subject to a federal injunction. So we'll see where this one goes.
And it's, I think we should point out, Title IX, as they say, didn't get off the bus yesterday on loose. This was a 1972 federal law designed to prohibit discrimination based on sex in educational programs and activities. At that time, in when this was born, the genesis of this, nobody was talking about this issue about transgender and transgender sports and all of that.
No, in fact, I think it would be fair to say, and I know there would be perhaps different interpretations as to the initial purpose of Title IX, but it would be fair to say that Title IX was designed in part to give women an equal shot, to put them on a level playing field, right? And I think in large part it's done that.
When it came to funding women's sports, it had those areas had been pretty much ignored up until 1972.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And I think, too, to your earlier point about the transgender issue not being in the discussion in 1972, absolutely it wasn't. But as you've seen, laws have ways of being interpreted differently over time. In some cases, the law's effect and application is expanded or broadened given current issues. And in some cases, it's limited. Title IX in recent years has been expanded and interpreted in a way that I think would be fairly said as being all-inclusive. Under Trump's executive order, again, keeping men out of women's sports, which is its title, Title IX is going to be, more restrictive because transgender women are not going to have an opportunity to participate in women's sports and probably won't have an opportunity to participate in men's sports either. And so there will be perhaps a group of athletes that will have no venue in which to participate in their athletic contest.
So the order has teeth.
Yes. the Education Department has said that it is going to carry out the policy by changing its interpretation of Title IX, and its interpretation is going to be consistent with the executive order that President Trump signed. Now, here in Arizona, there's a case involving almost an identical issue. This case is before a federal court here. It was filed in 2022, but it's still pending.
Oh, this is the one from 2022.
Yes.
Yeah, so this,
yes.
So we've got our own history with this here in Arizona.
We do. And interestingly, this case hasn't been decided yet. Now, the judge has issued an injunction, but that doesn't mean that the judge has made a decision on the enforceability of the law or the application of the law. So in this case, a federal judge here in Arizona cited Title IX in voiding a 2022 Arizona law that bars students whose biological sex at birth was male from participating in girls' sports at public or charter schools or at private schools that compete with those schools. So we have a case right here where a federal judge said that that law, that Arizona law that bars students whose biological sex at birth was male from participating in girls' sports was illegal. Now, the question is, with the executive order, is this case going to be decided differently? Because it seems to be inconsistent with the injunction that the judge issued, seems to be inconsistent with President Trump's executive order that was signed this week.
And that takes us back to something we've talked about so many times, Don Luce, about what law has precedent.
Right.
Federal or the federal or state.
Right. So the federal judge in this case, which, by the way, was brought by two transgender girls, one who attended school here in Tucson and the other one who attended school in Tempe. The federal judge in that case said that the Arizona statute ran afoul of federal law. But now maybe federal law has changed, or yes, the interpretation of federal law has changed depending on the effect that is given to President Trump's executive order, which, of course, is always subject to challenge in the courts. Mm-hmm. So it's entirely possible that this order titled Keeping Men Out of Women's Sports is going to be challenged. And it's entirely possible that a federal judge or a panel of judges, if it's appealed, which undoubtedly it would be, are going to have the last say in the matter.
Maybe all the way to the Supreme Court.
You know, that's where a lot of these that's where a lot of these disputes end up.
Yes.
Because anytime you have a president issuing an executive order that seeks to interpret or change the interpretation of a federal statute, which of course was enacted by Congress, the Supreme Court is the ultimate arbiter of whether that executive order is legal or not.
And it is worth noting that the superintendent of public instruction, Tom Horn, said that the defendant in the Arizona lawsuit, Mr. Horn, believes that the president's action will help him win the case.
Well, it's not going to hurt him.
No.
now whether that's enough to push it over the goal line, I don't know. But I'd rather have his argument than the other argument.
All right, Don Luce sticks around for another segment. It's the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. Coming up tomorrow, Leah Marquez Peterson, one of the five members of the Arizona Corporation Commission. Good timing with our booking of the commissioner after the news that three Arizona power companies, the big three, have decided nuclear energy may be the way to go, and maybe we need to build a second nuclear power plant in Arizona. We'll hear what the commissioner says tomorrow, but right now we'll take a break, then more with Attorney Don Luce on the Buckmaster Show.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter.
please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show as we begin segment four on this Thursday afternoon, doing a double segment today with Don Luce, and he's more than capable of handling more than one segment. We've got plenty to talk about with attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group, offices here in Tucson and Phoenix, and Don is our legal contributor, and we try to get him on the show the first Thursday of each month. All right, let's go from the whole issue of the transgender and women in men's sports to an issue that, well, it has to do with guns, as state lawmakers moving to provide specific authority for employees to carry guns in and around K through 12 public schools. What's the latest on this, Don Luce?
Right. So this is House Bill 2022. And before we get started on this, let's remind everyone that we have a part-time legislature. This is a part-time job. It starts in January, and usually it ends in May or June, right?
Right.
But in that short period of time, the legislature creates hundreds of bills every legislative session. Some of these bills are signed into law by the governor. Some of the bills are vetoed. But the legislature, as a part-time body, is very busy. So House Bill 2022.
And it's also worth noting that some of these bills, maybe dozens and dozens of them, are more statement bills. These often are brought by Republicans. But they know that the Democratic governor is going to say, bring out the veto. But at least they've gotten a little publicity about their issue.
Governor Hobbs has not been afraid to use the veto stamp.
No.
Which is understandable because some of her philosophies and principles are different than the philosophies and principles of the Republican legislature.
Exactly.
As a collective body.
All right.
Well, anyway, so the House has been working. Even though it's early February, they already have a bill dealing with guns and schools.
Mm-hmm.
So, little bit of background. This bill was sponsored by Prescott Republican Representative Selena Bliss, and it's called Save Our Children School Safety Program.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, under this bill, among other things, employees would be allowed to carry firearms on school grounds.
Mm-hmm.
So a listener might consider that to be a pretty radical deviation from what we historically have seen here and nationally. That would be wrong. Presently, school districts can enact policies allowing individuals to carry weapons on school grounds.
Mm-hmm.
That's already permitted.
Oh.
And nationally, that's not an aberration. There are dozens of states that have laws, you know, in various forms, allowing individuals to carry concealed weapons on school grounds. The states that allow school districts to grant that authority, in other words, to make their own decisions, include Arizona. Mm-hmm. So there are about 25 states that have policies nationally allowing schools or districts to give permission to individuals to carry guns. And Arizona is one of those states. But you would, I think, be surprised to hear some of the other states, because traditionally, I don't think you would associate some of these other states with strong gun rights laws, okay? For instance, Massachusetts.
Really?
Yes. How about Vermont?
Oh, surprising.
New York?
Surprising. Okay. More surprising.
So in this group, so about half of the country, about 25 states, have policies allowing schools or districts to give permission to individuals to carry guns.
Arizona, learn something here. I'm surprised.
That's right. Wow. It's not just west of the Mississippi.
Mm.
Now, getting back to the bill that has passed the House and is awaiting Senate approval, this would actually maybe limit the current state of affairs, because it would require certification by people who wanted to carry guns on campus. So they would, under this legislation, if it passes, they would have to first pass a certification program, which would be put together by the Arizona Department of Education. Now, interesting that when we were talking in the last segment about transgender girls in sports, the executive order requires the Federal Department of Education to implement those interpretation changes. Now we're talking about guns in Arizona, and the state legislation would require the Arizona Department of Education to essentially carry out the certification requirements.
Hmm.
So the Arizona Department of Education would provide at least 4 hours of training on when it is proper to use force, and 24 hours of actual firearms training.
Hmm.
Now, currently, there are no training requirements in order for a person to get permission from a school district to carry a firearm on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, this House bill is more limiting than the current state of legal affairs in Arizona as it pertains to weapons on campus.
Hmm. Our own Charles Heller, who is associated, I think Charles is the founder of the Arizona Citizens Defense League, in a story here, a lobbyist for that organization, Charles's organization, sees the main purpose of the law being providing training of teachers at no cost to them who want to be certified.
That's right. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, the existing law permits a school administrator to provide specific authorization for someone to have a gun on school grounds, but there's no certification requirement.
Hmm.
Under the proposed change, teachers would have to become certified, and so providing training of teachers at no cost to them is certainly one of the things that this bill would provide for.
Okay. So this bill has passed the House.
Yes.
And presumably will go to the Senate.
Yes.
And whether or not the governor would veto it, who knows?
Well, yeah. Now, remember, okay, so this is, you just brought up an interesting point. In the last legislative session,
yeah,
there were hundreds of bills that were sent to the governor. Only mm-hmm. a small number of them were actually signed into law.
Yes.
As I mentioned earlier, she freely used her veto stamp on a lot of those bills.
Hmm.
The legislature then referred a select number of those to the ballot, and in November, the voters made the decision, mm-hmm. and in many cases made the bills law, the ones that the legislature could not get the governor to agree to.
So they're using and have used, in some cases successfully, that avenue.
And in Arizona, that is a very legitimate and proper
very
way.
Very viable,
yep,
isn't it?
Exactly.
All right. Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group offices here in Tucson and Phoenix. Don, thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. On behalf of Attorney Don Luce and Tom Engineering and producing our program, I'm Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.